Hello and welcome to episode 14 of the Talking Football Podcast. My name's Derek Clark, and each week I bring you an exclusive in-depth interview with some of the most colourful and interesting characters in the beautiful game. Don't worry if you've missed any, you can listen to them back on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and also on derekclarksport.co.uk. This week, it was a real delight to chat to one of my oldest friends and someone who's making a real name for themselves as one of the finest coaches in the women's game. He's worked at Hamilton Accies, the SFA, Rangers and Manchester City, and now he's working as Girls Academy and Women's Manager at Heart of Midlothian. It is, of course, Kevin Murphy. It was a fascinating insight into how Kev got into coaching, how he's immersed himself in women's football, and also includes some valuable advice for budding young coaches. So sit back and enjoy this week's episode of the Talking Football Podcast. Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Talking Football Podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to say we're joined this week by an old friend of mine and one of the finest coaches in women's football. It is, of course, the one and only Kevin Murphy. Kevin, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hi Derek, it's a pleasure to invite me on, thank you very much.
Lots to talk about, Kev. We'll kick off all the way back, I'd imagine, and I'll ask you what inspired you to become a coach in the first place.
Going back a few years now, aren't you, Derek? I think obviously we had one of our old mutual friends, and I think it was episode one on your podcast, Ali Bain.
Yep.
So myself and Ali set out in the same journey. It was really through high school. We had a local, you know, clothing officers coming in to deliver what was the level one of the coaching courses, and I think we fell in love with it. Although I played obviously amateur level and loved football in general, you know, coaching was just a whole different concept to me, you know, and it was a lot more detailed than I thought it was ever before. I just thought, you know, football was just kick a ball about. So it was great to obviously get those guys in. It was Jim and Peter at the time. And they really inspired me to obviously pursue coaching. And one thing led on to another. We did a lot of voluntary work and got some paid work. And obviously that was the start of a coaching career. I think I was thinking about this today before I came on. I've been coaching probably for about 18 years or so.
Wow.
Which, I know, I feel really old when I say that. But it's been great, and I was so fortunate to start coaching at such a young age, because I feel that, you know, I think I'm relatively young, but I've got a lot of coaching hours in the bank, and I think that's been important. So yeah, I think that was the first kind of glimpse of that. And my old man as well, my dad, he used to take a lot of my teams when I was a boy as well. It's one way to guarantee that I got a game, I suppose. So he was really into obviously coaching and football, and I probably, without knowing it, kind of looked up to him as well in terms of that coaching role. And, you know, I've also took that on into my career now.
In terms of, you mentioned there, I mean, you've coached for a great number of years, but you started off very young, and you're still a young coach in general terms as well. How difficult has it been being a young coach going into this sort of game?
Yeah, I think I've been fortunate again in that, you know, you get the breaks, and I think I've worked quite hard to get to where I am too, but I started off, as you said in the introduction, in terms of women's football, and, you know, I did fall into that a little bit. You know, my girlfriend Lindsay was playing at the time at Hamilton, and I was playing, you know, for the local team Mill United, and our weekends would get spent with Lindsay coming to watch me play on a Saturday, and I would watch her play on a Sunday, obviously looking at her playing far better than I was as a footballer. And, and then the coach at Hamilton had left, and a couple of the guys had said, look, you should just step in for a few weeks, you know, you've got your first couple of coaching qualifications, just help them out. And I was like, listen, you know, this is a Premier League team in Scottish women's football. You know, some of the players were 10 years plus older than me. And they couldn't manage to get anyone, so I reluctantly said, yep, okay, I'll step in and help out. Ended up being at Hamilton for 8 or 9 years. So it was a long apprenticeship, but I found out very quickly from coaching women that, again, it was just, yeah, it's the same game, if you like, but it's the same sport, but a different game, and that, you know, they were very receptive to new ideas. They wanted to know the whys and a lot of things, and I think that really helped me as a coach, because I think a lot of coaches just go out and facilitate and put on sessions without really knowing the why of what they're doing. So I think as a young coach for me, stepping into that environment and working with, you know, a lot of these players had played for the national team, and really detailing and quizzing me why they were doing things, and it just really opened my eyes up to coaching more in terms of being detailed and having a real plan of what you're trying to do. And then from that point, I really made a conscious decision just to focus on women's football. I just really enjoyed the environment, as I said, and just the willingness of learning from the players, and also they weren't corrupt, if you like, in terms of, you know, wages and the media and all this sort of stuff. So there was an innocence to the game as well, Derek. So I really enjoyed that side of things. And I got fortunate. I got asked to do different things in terms of women's football and coaching, and that led me on to, you know, now working full time in women's football, which is great. So yeah, I've been really fortunate from that regard.
Yeah, in terms of when you first started out, Kevin, and obviously you're juggling it with being at school, and also when you went to university as well, was it difficult juggling the two?
Yeah, it was. You know, but it's not anything different to someone working, you know, at a local supermarket, you know, and doing so many hours as a part-time job. So, you know, I actually studied criminology at uni because I never thought that coaching would be a full-time career. So, you know, I had aspirations at police force, and, you know, I'd just done coaching and evenings, and I did all the shifts that no one else wanted, you know, the Friday night, Saturday morning, Sunday morning shifts. I started to work with Motherwell in the community too, so I was kind of working within the local authority and at Motherwell. And that was a great source of income for me, but more importantly, it was a great learning tool for me to go and work in different environments over a different variety of different age groups. And then when I graduated from university, I actually had failed my final interview for the police, and the journalist Peter Allen at the time, who also put me through my coaching courses when I was 16, had asked me to help out with him in terms of some admin work and coaching, which I duly did, and that led me on to a career in sport. I was active schools, was my first kind of full-time job, and then from that into football development, and then from that into club football. So I was very fortunate that I had good people there that gave me opportunities at the right time to allow me to then now go and do a job that I truly love.
Yeah, certainly. The courses that you'd done when you started off, Kevin, how did you find them, and did you enjoy doing the sort of the early touches and the other courses associated with it?
Yeah, like I said, I think you don't realise sometimes when you're a young person or you're a young footballer, you know, playing football, just how much detail and thought has to go into training sessions too. So the first few courses really opened my eyes up to that. Obviously, the first course is fairly basic. You know, it's more geared to working with young children, so it was quite self-explanatory, quite basic. But it was more the intricacies of how to speak to children, your coaching position, your coaching manner, your body language, all these sorts of things that you probably didn't really, you know, think about. To be honest with you, it was more just about the content you thought was important. But I think the more that you went through the coaching courses, the more that you realised that the detail is important, but also how your manner and how you conduct yourself and how you allow the session to flow. So I think the kind of 1.2 and certainly 1.3, the coaching in the game, was really interesting to me because it was more like the game. And again, I'd really lucky to have some fantastic tutors on those courses that really opened your eyes up to some aspects of football that, although you've played it through all your child years and youth years, you didn't know some of these things existed until these guys actually showed you through coaching courses. So, you know, I felt that I learned a lot from those, and they gave you a fantastic grounding for obviously for your licence courses too.
Yeah, definitely. When you started out, even now as well, Kevin, do you have any sort of coaching principles, or is the buzzword at the moment philosophies at all that you like to implement?
Yeah, I don't think I've actually had that until probably the last 5 years or so. I think as a coach, you never stop learning, you never stop developing as a coach. I think that's fundamentally most important. But I think as you get a bit older, you have a clear idea on how you think football should be played or how you adopt it. You know, for me, philosophy, and I don't want to get into this detail probably too much for this podcast, but philosophy and methodology for me are different things. You know, for me, a philosophy is in terms of how you are as a person, how you want your teams to be in terms of values and behaviours, and a methodology is more about how you like the team to play. So yeah, I think I've developed that over the years with different experiences at different clubs, But I think it's more important that you probably align it to how you feel as a person, what your values are. And in some ways, that should then reflect the teams that you have, that hopefully is a bit of an imprint in you and that team when you watch them on a Saturday or a Sunday or whatever.
Yeah, you spent 8 years at Hamilton. Then was it Rangers you joined after that?
Yeah, so I had during my time at Hamilton, I was a youth national coach as well, part time for the national teams, for the women's teams, which was great. And then I went on to do full time employment at Scottish FA in over in Eastern Barnshire as a football development officer. And then at that time, I then took up the role at Rangers part time, taking their women's team. And then I got a call from Craig Mulholland one day asking me if I'd like to come in full-time at Rangers and basically do a little bit of the community and the women's stuff. So kind of combining my kind of both skill sets into one role. So I jumped at the chance. You know, obviously Rangers are a huge club, so it's a fantastic opportunity to go and work at a huge football club. But also having full-time employment, you know, at a football club, I thought was too big an opportunity for me to turn my back on. So I took that opportunity. I'll be honest, it was a tough time. You know, that's when Rangers were going through a lot of their troubles at the time, so it was quite turbulent. It definitely had its ups and downs, but again, in hindsight, I think that was a fantastic thing for me because I learned so much in that, you know, 2.5 years there. Not just everything that happened at a football club, but also it was quite unique times at that point. So, you know, I really learned a lot both on and off the pitch of how football clubs are run. So yeah, again, invaluable time, and that hope, I think that gave me the experiences, obviously, to move on to my next role, which was at Manchester City, which was quite incredible.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because what sort of, I mean, no, Manchester City is this big, huge super club, if you like, but how did the move come about, and did you need much persuading to move down there?
No, I think I didn't need any persuading to go down. I don't think I even actually consulted anyone, to be honest with you. I just went, and then I probably then thought about the consequences after. But no, I applied for the job. I saw the job was advertised. I was looking for a technical director to oversee their girls' programme. So it was a very similar job to what I was doing at Rangers. And I just felt it was a fantastic opportunity. Obviously, the game down in England is more advanced in terms of infrastructure and finance and resource. So I thought it'd been a great opportunity for me to test myself because at that point I knew pretty much all you need to know about women's football. In Scotland, I'd worked at various age groups and national teams. I'd also been a head coach in the league for, you know, a number of years, probably about 12 years or so. So I really felt I had to challenge myself in something different. So to go down to Manchester to go and set up, it was basically their academy hadn't been established yet. So again, blank canvas to go and do something from scratch, not knowing any players, not knowing any, you know, infrastructure within there, I thought was a really good learning opportunity for me. So yeah, I learned so much from my 2.5 years there.
And did you notice much of a difference maybe in the standard and the facilities compared to what you're used to back home to what you are now experiencing at Man City?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I noticed when I first went down, even to my interview, you mentioned a buzzword earlier. I'll do another buzzword as well and say culture. I think the culture down there was incredible. You know, I think if you look at just at the social media platforms at Man City in terms of the women and the men, it does look integrated, but it's not a tick box exercise. I think when you're actually working in that environment, you do realise it's quite a special place, and they really do value the girls and women's programme just as equally as they do, you know, the men and the boys' programme. So that was a big change for me because I think, you know, all the years in Scotland that I worked with, you know, there was at times fights, you know, to get things, whether it be access to facilities, if it was more resource, and you just sometimes felt that you were fighting against the tide. So I think Manchester City was a great experience for me in terms of, you know, the club were very inclusive. They did want to progress. They did want to give it, you know, resource and time. And yeah, so that was a fantastic experience from that point of view. Standard-wise, I was quite surprised when I first went down, as I said to you, that the academy had just been kind of started along the journey. And I, you know, foolishly thought that the standard was a lot higher than it was when I left Rangers, and it wasn't, to be honest with you. I'd say the standard Rangers was better. So, you know, for me, we had to then look at that and decided to have open trials at the end of that year, and we had 850 girls attend. There are 850 girls attend the trials, and we trialled every single one of them over, I think it's a 4-week period. And I think just by given that the club's name, the infrastructure, the support, the facilities, we managed to attract a lot of good players to come to those trials, and we were very fortunate that we recruited a lot of young, talented players, but also give them a fantastic elite experience as well. So we had a lot of good success, you know, in that 2.5 years I was down there, just in terms of youth honours, but more importantly, those girls making transition into first team at Man City, which has been great, but also making first team appearances across WSL and abroad, which is great for their progress as well. So yeah, it was a special time, and obviously I still follow a lot of the players very closely now and see how they're getting on in their careers.
Yeah, did you ever sort of collaborate with the men's side of the game at all, and the coaches from that side of things?
Yeah, it was just a natural thing, Derek, to be honest with you. We shared the same building, the same offices, so probably like most good environments, the best chat comes at lunchtime. You'd all sit together and have lunch together, all mixed in, or you go to get a coffee and you bump into the under-18s coach or the under-12s coach and you start chatting away to them. So I think there was a lot of cross-pollination with that, and I think that you can't help but pick up things. Or, you know, if I'm sitting in the office and I'm fed up staring at my laptop for 2 hours, then I would just go out the office and watch a training session that was happening on outside within the campus, you know. So again, you'd be watching one of the boys teams that would come and train. It was a real place for learning for me. I learned so much as a coach there and as a person, and could not absorb that sort of that knowledge, because it was all around you wherever you went. I learned a hell of a lot, not just on the football side of the bed, off that as well, but I think just how the setup was and how it was inclusive, you just had to absorb all that, and I think that was really clear in terms of the club have also got this, you know, you mentioned earlier about a methodology, a philosophy, and we adopted that within the girls programme too, and you could see that it was clear when you watched the teams train and watched the games that the teams played, that they had this clear way of playing, which I thought was fantastic to see.
Yeah, so 2.5 years then at Manchester City, all going well. And then you come back home to Hearts. What brought you to the club, and was that a hard one to come back up the road?
Yes and no. Obviously, I've said how much I enjoyed my time down there, and I did. But I think, you know, just family issues, you know, I wanted to come back up the road. My partner's dad unfortunately took ill, and you know, we knew that, well, I wanted to be back up with Lindsay to make sure that she was okay, so I knew that my time in Manchester would be up soon, so it was just looking for the opportunity to come back up the road. And I was very fortunate that I got a phone call from Roger Arnott, who is the academy manager at the club, and he was saying that we're looking to invest in girls and women's football and try to give it the same cadence as the boys, and really adopt a similar model to what I was used to down in Manchester. So I think with my previous experience of clubs up in Scotland a few years previously, I was a bit sceptical. You know, I thought, are they just doing a tick box exercise here, or are they looking to actually do this properly? So I went up and I met with Roger, and it was fantastic. I was blown away with the club's plans in terms of, you know, the integration within the girls, you know, making sure that they get the exact same access as the boys do in terms of the facilities, the contact time, the resource and the support. And I just got a feeling from the club that they were really serious about it. And I know that Anne Budge had wanted to do this since she came in charge at the club, but the club weren't on a financial footing to obviously go and do that. But, you know, fast forward 5 years since Anne took over, and they felt that the time was now to go and do that, which again I think says a lot about the club, that they wanted to do it right. I think that the temptation for a lot of clubs is just to go and do it and do it as a tick box exercise and try to do a kind of PR job on it, that people out with the club think, oh, you're doing a fantastic job. But perhaps it was never about that, it was to make sure that, you know, if they were going to do it, they wanted to do it right. So yeah, it's been exciting. I've been very fortunate that I came up in January this year, and I've had pretty much a whole year to plan the integration. So the club officially take over the kind of current women's and girls structure at the end of this season, which is November for the girls and women's season. and then we bring it in-house. So yeah, I've been very fortunate. I've had the best part of a year to plan all that as well, which is great. Again, as you know, in football, you don't normally get that luxury of planning and thinking ahead. So that's been new to me, which I've really enjoyed. So we're just looking forward to getting started now.
Yeah, certainly. In terms of the women's game, from when you first initially stepped into it, Kev, to where it is now, would you say it's came on leaps and bounds, or has it improved somewhat since you first started?
Massively, absolutely massively. I think I think everyone can see that, to be honest with you. Probably the biggest thing for me is just the speed and the fitness of the players. Certainly in Scotland, you know, Anna Signol came in and she took the Scandinavian model. You know, having been Swedish herself, she the culture there was to train 4 or 5 times a week. And, you know, when Anna came in and said that all clubs should train 4 or 5 times a week, we all kind of laughed, because it was very much a Tuesday, Thursday, you know, game Sunday sort of model. But surely, in time, you know, one or two clubs start to train 4 or 5 times a week, and then everyone else then starts to get jealous and thinks, well, we need to do the same or else we're going to fall far behind. So there's this domino effect. So all the clubs in Scotland, you know, certainly within the Premier League, train 3, 4, 5 times a week. So that had a massive impact. And I think you saw, you know, a lot of Scottish players now migrate down to England or abroad and now making a full-time living from it. Just because, like, the professionalism within Scotland had increased. When you say professionalism, I don't mean in terms of monetary, per se, but more so just in terms of the outlook and attitude to the training and the infrastructure. So I think that had a massive impact domestically. But I think also you can see, certainly down in England, but also across all European countries, that the game is growing at a rapid rate. You see that with all the crowd sizes now, and obviously down in England, they've all been professional now. So the product on the pitch is a lot better as well. So yeah, I think it's just growing and growing, strength to strength. I've been involved in women's football since 2005, so this is my kind of 14th, 15th year in women's football, and honestly, I can say every year it's just improved, and I think it's only going to get better, to be honest with you. So it does bode well for the future and for the young players now coming up in Scotland or in England. You know, they've got great aspirations now to go and be a professional footballer, but more importantly, they've got the infrastructure from clubs now to help fulfil that, whereas maybe, you know, even 3 or 4 years ago, that didn't exist.
Yeah, and I mean, the Women's World Cup, I know you were there in France in the summer, Kev. That was a great platform to showcase the women's game, I guess, to a worldwide audience.
Yeah, again, it was just brilliant to see, you know, games that by and large, were competitive. Big crowds in most of the games. As I said to you, I think the athleticism, you know, the speed, power, the pace, it just, for me, is improved so much. And I get a lot of people who don't have a lot of exposure to women's football saying, you know, comparing it to the men's game all the time. And it just really does my head in, because it's not, you shouldn't compare it. And I keep saying that to folk. It's the same in any sport, you know, if it's rugby, if it's golf, if it's basketball, it doesn't really matter. I think you just got to see the sport for what it is and the qualities that it brings. And I think, you know, the World Cup in France, I think a lot of people, I won a lot of people over, because I think people actually started to see for what it is. But I also appreciate as well that, I think, as I mentioned before, because of the athleticism and because the players are more professional, then you're seeing a better product on the pitch. And people who are football fans can now see past it's women footballers, and they can see, actually, well, this is just a game of football, and they can enjoy it for what it is, which I think has been a massive step forward. And I think that's why you saw such an increase in the crowds, you know, domestically and obviously in Europe now for women's football. So hopefully they can use that as a real turning point, and they can also kick on from here.
Yeah, Scotland, of course, reached the World Cup this summer, which is a great achievement. Maybe it didn't do as well as what they'd hoped to do. What do you think the national team needs to do to sort of reach that next level?
I think they just have to keep doing what they're doing. Obviously, as you mentioned, it was a great achievement for Shell and the team to qualify. And, you know, I think we were all, I was there for the game against Argentina, and it's probably the worst I've ever felt at a game, to be honest with you, because I think everyone probably felt it happening as well. I think that was the kind of galling thing. So to go out the way we did, I thought was so disappointing. But I think on reflection, you know, qualification and being there, obviously, is a great achievement. But I think more importantly now, the players have been through that now, so they've now been at a European Championships, they've now been at a World Cup. So they've now got that experience. So in terms of what they need to do now, I think it's still a relatively young team who have amassed a lot of experience and have a lot of caps now. So I think for me, the next kind of 3 to 5 years, the squad will be relatively the same. I don't envisage a lot of change. So I think just learning from their experiences at the Euros and at the World Cup, so that when they do qualify, and they will qualify, I'm sure of that, for future competitions, they pull on that experience so they can, games like Argentina, see them through and manage the game a little bit better than perhaps they should have done, obviously, back in France in that game against Argentina.
Yeah, let's hope so. In terms of the game in general, Kev, how do you see it progressing in, say, the next 10 to 15 years?
I think for me, obviously, more clubs will go professional. I think we would like to see that, to give more opportunities for players to have that aspiration. We'd also like to build on the crowd. I think certainly in Scotland, we'd like to see more people turn out to games. For me personally, I'm not one in Scotland that thinks we should have a professional league. I just don't think the infrastructure and the finance in Scotland is there. I personally like to see a bigger focus on the kind of dual career and employability factors for women in sport. And particular football, so they can actually dovetail their education or their employment with football. And for those who are talented enough and who can and who want to make a career in women's football, then they've got other opportunities down in England or in Europe to go and do that. But I think for me, what I would like to see is certainly more TV coverage, more sponsorship coming into the women's game, and for people really to perceive women's football for what it is. And not to draw comparisons in the men's game. That for me, that was kind of 3 or 4 main things I'd like to see within the next kind of 5 years or so.
And you mentioned the men's game there, Kev. Of course, you've worked in the women's game for some time. Do you ever see yourself maybe making that transition and working in the men's game at all?
Nah, to be honest with you, Derek, it's never been something that's ate away at me. I'm really, as I said earlier, I'm really happy working in women's football. I've been fortunate that, you know, my last 3 jobs have all been, you know, women's football, if you like, and women's sport. So, yeah, I feel that this is what I know. I feel that I'm fairly knowledgeable in this area, and I'm very passionate about continuing to grow the game. So it's not something that I wake up every day thinking, oh, I wish I worked in the men's game. But at the same time, I know how football and sport can work. So I would never say never. But, you know, hand in heart, it's not something that motivates me or interests me at this moment in time.
Yeah, I know you'd done the UEFA Pro licence a few months ago, yeah, as well, Kev. How was that? How difficult was that, and how pleasing is it to get that under your belt?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It was a real kind of mindset shift from all your other coaching courses, you know, obviously most of which are always on the pitch. Your Pro licence still has obviously elements of practical to it, but primarily it's all about management, and you're working on a wide range of things, from how to negotiate at board level and dealing with agents to managing budgets and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it was fascinating for me, Derek, to go on that course, and not just also listen to all the fantastic speakers and all the different topic areas that they covered, but also from the guys on the course, you know, they've all got a wealth of experience in the game. It was great to pick those brains and get to see what they were thinking about certain topics. So yeah, it was a lot of work, but I think, you know, you get a lot from it. You know, I'm very proud to say that I've done it now, and you know, it's just one other thing that, you know, that I've did. But I think now that I've got the pro license, doesn't mean that you stop learning. I think it's so important that you continue to seek other opportunities to go and learn. And I hear a lot of people saying quite a lot, you know, you should take your time through your coaching courses, you know, there's no rush, and I totally understand that kind of rationale. But what I keep saying to people is, what harm is it to go and push yourself, you know, and go through these courses? I think for me, as long as you're testing yourself, you're putting yourself out of your comfort zone, you're willing to fail, I think that's important. You know, a lot of young coaches say to me, but what about if I fail my B licence, or what about if I fail my A licence? And I say, well, it's not actually failing, it's about learning, isn't it? And it's about making sure that you put yourself out of your comfort zone, you throw yourself into those scenarios, and you can always go back in 6 months or a year's time and refine it and learn and develop and do it. So, yeah, great for me to go and do that, learned a lot from it, but for me it's just one more thing, and I'm kind of looking at the next thing now. What else can I do now to be better than I was yesterday, sort of thing.
Yeah, but you've just sort of touched on my final question there, Kevin. I was just going to ask you if you were to give advice to a young Kevin Murphy when it's just starting out in the coaching game, what would that be?
Yeah, you're probably right. I touched on it. I think probably three things for me. Make sure that you work hard. You know, you've got to put the hours in. You've got to make sure that you know, whether it's voluntary, whether it's, you know, doing shifts, you know, at local community clubs that nobody else wants, but getting out there and getting loads of experience and try to work through different areas of the game. It'd be boys, girls, you know, under 16s, under 9s. I think that's important. But the second thing is kind of growth mindset. So having that ability of not being scared to fail, you know, willing to put yourself out there, get yourself out of your comfort zone, making sure you're stretching yourself. And then the third one is probably networking, making sure that you go to the CPD events or you go to go and visit other coaches and see how they work, get practice and get ideas and shape how you want to be as a coach. So yeah, I would say probably those three things are the most important for any coach, not just a young coach, but for any coach.
Absolutely superb. Well, Kevin Murphy, that'll do us here. Thanks very much for joining us on the Talking Football podcast.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, Derek.
Well, that was episode 14 of the Talking Football podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Remember, you can catch any episode you've missed on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and also at derekclarksport.co.uk. We're also on Twitter at @talking_football, and you can catch us on Facebook as well. I hope you can join me again next week. Speak soon. Bye for now.